step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James, and today we have an amazing guest who's just gonna, right there behind David, right there, you're gonna see him. It's gonna be Mr. Stacy King of the Give Me the Hot Sauce Podcast, but that's not what he's really of. I mean, he's a Chicago Bull, a three-time champion, a sports commentator, a hilarious guy. He's one of the best people ever, and we're gonna have him for an hour to talk, and it's gonna be so much fun. Now, just so you guys know, David is gonna be leading the questions here because I'm not a big basketball guy. I know some basketball stuff. I know some 90s basketball, but David is like the encyclopedia basketball. So he's going to be taking charge here. I will throw in with some comments there. So I know what it's going to be like to be Luke in this episode. That's what this episode is going to be. me being Luke. We're going to be after like, James, did you have a question? James, did you have a question? Are you ready for that?
Yeah, no, I'll be sending privately in the chat, James, talk.
So that's what I do to Luke. So now, Luke, if you're listening to this, you know I'm going to know how you feel, so I'm going to be a little bit better about trying to relay that to you in the future. So I appreciate it.
And I will be geeking out and loving life, and I don't know that I've ever been more excited about an interview that I've ever conducted. This is – and James is right. I literally read the Encyclopedia of Basketball multiple times as a kid. I'm a basketball junkie in general, but I am especially 90s basketball was like, it was my world. So no, I'm going to resist the temptation to just turn this into just total basketball, like inside basketball stuff. There will be laughs. We'll make some jokes, and the king is hilarious, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
We're going to have a lot of fun, so let's jump into it. Let's bring Stacy King on, and here we go. I'm very excited to have you here. I'm very excited. I've been listening to your podcast. It's so interesting. You guys go over so many topics. I think David actually has the best intro question for you, because I think that's where we're going to start. David.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I won't start necessarily an intro question. What I will say is the reason why I'm here, I'm not one of the hosts of this show. They bring me on occasionally. I'm a stand-up comic, but they bring me on. But they hit me up because I am the biggest sports nerd in the world. I was born in the 80s, so like 90s NBA was like, it was my life. And, you know, and so they needed an expert. One of the hosts isn't even here because he didn't even know that the Clippers were in LA. He thought they were in Boston. So we had to get rid of him. Yeah, it was rough. So it's an honor to be here. Right? Yeah, exactly. So it's an honor to be here. And although I will say, I was a 90s Warriors fan. So you understand the struggle of being a 90s Warriors fan. So the only jersey I had in my apartment right now was my Steph jersey. So it's all I can do. Hey. You guys destroyed me throughout my childhood, so I figure, but we got the Sooners, so we're good.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I guess, first off, I wanted to be – the two things I wanted to be, you are. So you have lived both of my dreams, because growing up, I wanted to be a professional basketball player, and I wanted to be a color commentator. So you've got everything – and, like, my one of my best friends from childhood, he plays pro ball in Israel now. And it was like both of our dreams since we were kids to play professionally. Fortunately, as he got bigger and blacker, I got skinnier and whiter. So it just, it didn't work out. So then I was like, well, I'm much better at like talking through what's going on here. So then, but apparently the Warriors might, my time playing intramural basketball at Santa Rosa Junior College was not enough to get me on with Kalena and Fitz. So you're an impressive man. And I am definitely excited. So the first thing I'll say is like, since you've lived both of my dreams, like what was it like the first time, like your first game, or even just maybe your first game wasn't something to write home about, but you're that first season, like what was it like that first season? And then what was it like the first color commentating? Cause that's hard. Like people don't understand. Like you've talked about it on there with the telestrators who don't do the right things. And like, those are two very overwhelming things. So just give us like, you know, a couple of highlights from those two experiences for you.
Well, I mean, you know, going to University of Oklahoma, I played for the national championship. So I was on a big time college basketball team. One of the best teams that never win a championship in the history of the game. So we finished 36-4 in the 1988 national championship game where we lost to Kansas. So I was on a high profile team before I went to Chicago. But you know, we had a player on our team, Harvey Grant, who was his twin brother I play with. So I play with both Grant brothers, one in college and then one at the pro level. So we used to watch a lot of the Bulls games when I was in college. And I got inside information about things that were going on with the team and the players and who was liked, who wasn't liked. So then when I got to the NBA, you know, everybody was a Michael Jordan fan. You know, I had a Michael Jordan poster on my wall. Funny story, true story. I have a Michael Jordan poster on my wall when I was at Oklahoma. And before every game, I'd rub the poster. Boom, I'd have to touch the poster.
No way.
And then I'd go out and score 30, 40 points. So I always attributed touching that poster of Michael Jordan brought me some kind of luck. And I'm very superstitious. So I stay with the same plan, you know. So once I get to Chicago, I'm thinking, you know what? I don't need the poster anymore. I got MJ right here. So I can touch MJ. So my first preseason game is against Detroit. And Michael's across from me. I was in a locker across from Michael. So he's getting dressed to get ready for the game. So he's got his shirt off, you know. And so I'm like, you know what? I got to go out and warm up. So as I'm going to go out the door, I'm just going to rub Mike and then go warm up. Then I have luck and, you know, forget the poster. I got the actual guy. So Mike's back to me. He's putting his pants on and everything. And at the time, I didn't really think it was awkward. You know, I'm a kid. I'm like 21. I didn't think it was awkward. I'm just like, you know, no big deal. Like, no poster. I got Michael. So I go over to Michael and I rub his back. He was talking to a reporter and I rubbed his back. And he turned around and he gave me a look like, what are you doing? Like, you can't do that, man. I'm like, hey, man. I said, hey, man, I used to rub your poster before every game. And he said, well, maybe you need to go get that poster back.
That is hilarious.
So that was that's one of my funny stories when I first got in the league. Another story, we're playing on TNT, our first national game. We're playing against Cleveland Cavaliers. So it was my first introduction to the rivalry with the Cavaliers because MJ the year before hit that game-winning shot where he jumps up in the air.
Yeah.
So there was a bitter rivalry between the Bulls and the Cavs. So this was my first introduction to that game. So we're on the road in Cleveland, and, you know, MJ's just killing. One of the most impressive games I'd ever seen. So he ends up scoring like 69 points. He scores 69 points. I get in the game. Now, I'm coming from Oklahoma where I average 26 points a game. I was a scorer. So I only got 1 point. I got a free throw. So after the game was over, all the press comes over to me because I'm a rookie, first-round pick, and they want to know if I've ever seen anything like this. You know, what was the experience like watching Michael in the zone? And, you know, he was just out there and he's by himself almost, you know? And I said, you know what? This is going to be the night I remember, you know, that me and Michael, you know, combined for 70 points and we won the game. And so they were all looking at me like I was crazy. Like, did he just say they combined for 70? And the reason why I said that was because I knew my teammates in Oklahoma would thought I had 30 and MJ scored, you know, 40. Because they knew I was a scorer and they would think I scored 30 without looking at the box score. So yeah. That's the reason why I said that. And that quote today is one that is still out there. It's like one of the best quotes ever.
That's hilarious. That's amazing. Yeah, no, that's a great line. Your future as a talker was there right from the beginning. And it is funny because I was going to ask you, like, one of the questions I was going to ask you was why, like, the best talker ever, maybe in franchise history, wasn't in The Last Dance. And then you answered in the BJ Armstrong interview that, because I was going to say, like, were they afraid, like, that you were going to, like, be too real? And then they were afraid that you were going to be too real. But that was, and then my other question was just going to be, do you have back issues from having to carry Michael to three championships? Like, is it hard? Like, I don't know.
hey, all I'm going to say is, I was happy to be on that team because we call that the first dance, not the last dance, because we started it. And we had Michael in his prime. We had Scotty in his prime. And it was the first time Chicago had ever won a championship at the NBA level. And so, and you know anything about Chicago, it's a sports town. Oh, yeah. They love their teams. And so for winning that championship, that first one, and then the next two, like, I can go to any restaurant basically not pay for any food, even to this day, you know, because they love those teams. And but, of course, I don't take advantage of that. I like to pay for my own stuff. But that's how much they appreciate the guys that played on that team. And, you know, MJ, honestly, in my opinion, you always hear the GOAT conversation and, you know, LeBron. And, you know, we live in a what have you done for me lately society. You know, a lot of these kids who are growing up now, they don't even remember Michael as a player until this last dance. Okay. Yeah. Most of the kids identify Michael as the guy who sells shoes, not as Michael Jordan, the great basketball player. So this last dance introduced him to a whole new audience. You know, our parents, you know, your parents, you know, their kids now recognize, like, oh my God, this dude, Michael Jordan, was great. He is way better than Kobe and LeBron.
Well, and the other thing I loved about the documentary is, as a fan of 90s basketball, it also introduced them to other players like Karl Malone and the various rivalries. Like those, I mean, because that's the thing. That's, and you can speak on this because you commentate the current NBA. And as a Warriors fan, like, I've benefited from the new wave. But to me, I enjoyed the brand of 90s basketball more than current basketball today. Because there was just such a greater variety of ways to attack. Now it's, you know, it's a three or it's a dunk. I mean, there's some guys are doing it. Jokic does a little different stuff. But, like, but back then, it was just so textured. And it was tough, too. Like, I mean, I'm sure.
You had to be tough to play in that era.
Yeah, well, and that's seriously what I was going to say. Yeah, like you know, as a big man, like Oakley and guys like that, like you, I mean, you can tell. Was there anyone where you were like, oh man, this guy again, I got to get hacked by this guy. Like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it was always Lane Beer, you know, Oakley, you know, guys, it was a physical league. Every team, you know, was physical. It didn't matter if it was the number one team or the bottom team, you know, and then when you win a championship, you know, you're everybody's Super Bowl or everybody's playoff game. Yeah. So there's no nights off. So if you go into New Jersey and they're in last place in the Atlantic Division, you know, they're playing you like it's a national, you know, like it's the NBA finals. So you have no nights off. So 82 games, you got to bring it, you know. Yeah. Being on that team, you know, we were all close, you know. It was like being on a rock. I always tell people it's like being on a rock band. You know, we traveled and we would go. These guys don't have no idea the fans, how many fans that we had in the 90s compared to what they have now. These guys get excited when there's 20 people show up at the bus at the hotel. And I'm like, oh, my God, boy, if y'all only knew what we had to – I mean, we would have 1,000 people. We'd pull into Utah. And now, you know, Utah's not one of the most, you know, places where you would like L.A. or Miami. But they got a very nice fan base. They're a loyal fan base. Yeah. And there would be 1,000 people waiting for us when we got off the bus to get to the hotel. And that's when you didn't have security. So people could actually sit in the hotel, in the bar, the lobby, and it was crazy how it was. Nice. But the physicality, watching, playing in that era and watching now and seeing how the games are blown, everybody wants to shoot a three. You know, I'm not a big analytics guy. I think analytics has kind of ruined the game. in my opinion. That's just my opinion. Is there a place for it in the game? Yeah, there's a place for it. But to make it seem like that's the only thing, like I'm an eye test guy, okay? So if I see a guy run, jump, you know, shoot, and I can see it, I'm like, okay, that guy can play. You know, he's a good athlete, can run, jump. I don't need analytics to tell me, well, he shoots, you know, 50% in the corner with a hand up in his face. He shoots, you know, in the right corner, he shoots 39% unguarded. You know, I don't need that because at the end of the day, you know, you've got everybody shooting threes now. I mean, there's guys shooting threes in the game. And if you are, like you said, you listened to me and BJ, we were talking about this. You got guys who are not three-point shooters. You could go out there and knock down a higher percentage than some guys that are shooting in the NBA level. And I'm not I'm being serious.
No, I mean, and I did win.
Stevie Wonder can walk out there and hit a three over some of these guys. You know, when you're shooting, if you're shooting below 30%, you shouldn't be shooting threes, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, you should be 35% or higher to even be at the three-point line. You know, the art of the mid-range shot is gone. If you look at guys like Kawhi Leonard, you know, they you know, this analytics is trying to get a lot of these guys away from the mid-range game. But you look at all the superstars in this league, they all got deadly mid-range games.
Well, you know, and you Kevin look at Durant, also in the playoffs. Like, when they're in the – like, look, you look at the Rockets, they went so heavily into just threes or dunks, but then they get into game sevens against the Warriors and different people like that. And they couldn't do anything. Once that three, like when once they went cold, when the game slows down and the defense is slowing things down, you need a good mid-range. Happens. Yeah.
That's what happens because in the playoffs, there's two different styles of basketball. In the regular season, because teams don't have time to prepare because there's so many games, you know, it's up and down, basically. Okay.
Yeah.
But once you get to the playoffs, you know, teams have time to dissect what you like to do. They have time to dissect your plays, you know, take certain things away. So now it becomes a half-court game. Now it becomes a slower game. And that's why you saw like a team like, you know, Denver with a very good low post player, Jokic, who's also versatile enough to play on the perimeter, had a lot of success. I mean, they were a game away from getting to the finals. And, you know, so if you got a dominant big like Embiid, you know, they're going to cause teams problems in the playoffs because it becomes half court then and those guys become.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
You know, they become a factor in those kind of games.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, it's – it. And James, I mean, James says it all the time. No, kidding. I will say, sorry, James, real quick, because you know, you talked about like the first dance and those three rings, and then they did you so dirty sending you to Minnesota. No offense to the people of Minnesota.
That's like getting sent to Siberia.
Yeah, well, Siberia, and those weren't the Garnett Timberwolves. Were the, you know, you had
J.R.
Ryder, Leitner. I mean, that was dirty.
Yeah, it was, you know what, but I asked to be traded. They didn't send me there. I asked to be traded because at that time, Michael retired, went to go play baseball. We all thought he was done. You know, Scott Williams left and went to Philadelphia for a bigger contract. Horace was going to go to Orlando. So we were kind of
–
the Bulls were kind of breaking up. So I felt like, you know what, I want to see what I can do as a starter. I want to see what I can do being a main focal point. You know, because when you come in the league – as a two-time All-American, Player of the Year in your conference, National Player of the Year.
You
come to a team like the Bulls that have won 50 games. Normally, when you get a lottery pick, it's teams that are bad. And, you know, great players go to teams that are bad. But the Bulls won 50 games before I got there. They went to the semifinals of the Eastern Conference and took Detroit to like six or seven games. And they were just a couple of players away from, you know, getting better. So they were able – they had three first-round picks that year, a 50-win team. That's – matter of fact, the rule of the protected first-round picks, that's because of the Bulls. So when you see, when you hear all these people talking about trading first round picks, but it's protected.
Yeah.
That's because of what happened in 1989 is because the Bulls got a number 6, number 17, and I think 22 or 23. So they got 3 first round picks to a 50 win team with a Michael Jordan who's just in his prime, a Scottie Pippen who was just coming into his prime. So yeah. Kind of like, oh my God, a 50 win team now has even gotten better.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So they put that insane. That rule in for because of the Bulls.
All right, that's great. Didn't know that. That's good knowledge.
I have 2 questions for you. First one is, outside of playing in Chicago, which is your home turf, what is your next favorite place to play? Or when you were playing, what was your next favorite city to play in? And then do you have any great road trip stories of going to that place?
Man, I would probably say, man, there's, you know, any place warm, but I always say Cali. I love California, man. Before the Bulls drafted me, I was hoping I'd get drafted by someone in California. I didn't care if it was the Clippers. You know, I knew it wasn't going to be the Lakers.
You would have cared if it was good. The Clippers. You would have cared
but
if it was the Clippers.
Clippers or Sacramento, you know, Golden State, somewhere in California. I was looking forward to it. Sacramento, in the 89 draft, had the number 1 pick. And I was supposed to go to Sacramento. I like Sacramento. One of my mentors, Wayman Tisdale, the late, great Wayman Tisdale, was already on the team. And so we were both basically the same player. You know, I was just bigger. I was taller than Wayman, but we're both post-up players or whatever.
Yeah.
And they felt like, nah, we need to get a more defensive center. So they went after Purvis Ellison. Well, it's funny. They went after, you know, they wanted Purvis Ellison because he's supposedly the better defensive player, but I blocked way more shots at him in college than he did. So that kind of threw me off a little bit. But
yeah.
I didn't really want to – I mean, I'm glad I didn't go to Sacramento because, you know, at the end of the day, I want to win. I don't want to be on losing teams, you know. And so, you know, the Bulls really – that was a great time for me because – and when I go back and look at those teams, guys, I play with Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
I got coached by a Hall of Fame coach and Hall of Fame assistant coaches. Okay, Phil Jackson's first year was my first year. So no one knew he was going to be a Hall of Fame coach at that particular time. He was taking over for a 50-win team. But you got Phil Jackson, it's a Hall of Fame coach. You got Tex Winters, a Hall of Fame coach. You've got Jerry Krause, a Hall of Fame general manager. Michael, Scotty, you know, Hall of Famers. I mean, so I was very blessed to play in an environment and structured environment that really kind of, you know, kind of like formed me to the person that I am today. You know, I would rather win 50 games and be part of something special than average 25 and get my butt kicked every night. Because I'll tell you, it's a funny story. I get to Minnesota, and my first introduction to Minnesota, the coach was Sidney Lowe. So he calls me up and says, hey, do you want to, you know, play tomorrow night? I go, yeah, I want to play. I'm like, so he said, okay, you pass the physical. You don't have to play. You can wait, you know, a couple of days, get acclimated to the city. I'm like, no, I want to play now. So we're going to play Houston. So he said, all right, we're going to have shoot around tomorrow morning. And if you know anything about shoot arounds are like the easiest thing in the pro game. It's like you come in, you go over the game plan, walk through it, and then you shoot and, you know, get some shots up. So it's like an hour. So they tell me to say, okay, shoot arounds at 10 o'clock. So in Chicago, when shoot around's at 10 o'clock, you're there at 8:30.
Yeah.
You know, you're there lifting weights. You know, it's professional. Okay. So I get to Minnesota. I'm there at 8:30. No one's there. You know, it's in a health club. It's in the Target Center. So I'm looking for players. I'm like, well, where's everybody at? You know, because I'm used to structure. So no one shows up. About 9:30, 9:45, a couple players walk in. And I'm like, okay, shoot around starts in 15 minutes and these guys are just walking in. Now, because you got to remember where I'm coming from, you know, structure, discipline, you know, championship team. So two guys come in and that's it. Two players. So I go, well, where's the rest of the team? They may come or they may not come.
No.
And I'm like, what? Like, what, who does that? You know?
Yeah. So
we didn't have enough people to actually do a shoot around. So the coaches start going, there's a health club in the place we practice at. So we got the equipment manager to be Clyde Drexler. We got the trainer to be Olajuwon. Looked upstairs. There were people on a treadmill. A lady on a treadmill said, "Hey, can you come down here and help us walk through?" So we brought this lady off the treadmill. Then there was another guy rehabbing with a hurt ankle. He had a cast on. He said, "Hey, I don't think I can do anything, but I can just stand still." And they said, "That's good. We just need you to stand still then. We need you to be, Vernon Maxwell." So we had all these regular people that were just, you know, working out, coming through an NBA walkthrough. And I was just like, man, what the hell have I got myself into? You know, because you always tell people this, you know, be careful what you wish for. And the grass ain't always greener on the other side. And I found that out. And you know what? I was there for like 2 years and I finished out my contract and they wanted me to, you know, stay. You know, they changed some people in the front office. But I was like, nah, man, I'm getting tired of winning only 25 games and getting my butt kicked and hearing people say when I'm getting beat, "Where's Black Jesus at now?" Because that's what they called MJ, you know, Black Jesus. "You ain't got Black Jesus with you now, Stacey. Where's that man? Where's the black cat?" And I'm like, oh, I got to listen to this. I'm done, man. I'm done.
Hey, and Stacey, the other great thing, the other reason why it was great that you didn't get drafted by Sacramento is – no offense, I love Sacramento. I love performing there. But, I mean, so much better to be a Bulls commentator than a Kings commentator. Not that the Bulls have been, like, you know, winning championships lately. But, I mean, that's a tough road doing color commentary for the, Kings.
It is tough. I mean, I'll tell you this. It's like nothing like being in a big city. You guys know that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like being in a big city. And I've been very blessed because, you know, my career started here as a player, and then my career as a broadcaster started here. And there's a lot of guys in this that do this that have to start smaller markets and then try to work their way up to bigger markets. And I've been very blessed, man. And, you know, Jerry Krause believed in me and, you know, got me in this position. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I go from being a player. This is my 16th year as a broadcaster. So, you know, I've got almost 30 years, you know, in this organization together. So it's awesome. And most guys work their whole career to get to a big city. You know, they've got to go from smaller market, you know, stay 8 years, 5 years. You know, I was able to just basically fall out of the sky into Chicago. So it's worked out well for me.
Well, and it's smart, too. I mean, the way that you've positioned yourself, because, like, you're known, like, you have great catchphrases, you're funny, you're real. And so that's the other benefit you have is, like, you're known for being real so you can stay real in the game. Because certain, like, hometown color commentators, you can tell, like, they want to say certain things, but they're, like, they're making business decisions to not say those things. But, like, you were just, like right out there right from the jump and smart move. I mean, things have worked out well for the Kings.
You know what's funny you say that, though, because when I first started doing this, I had people tell me, oh, you can't do that. You know, that's not professional and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if you ever followed me as a player, the things I did as a player, I do now. I've always given people nicknames, even as a player. I got a great sense of humor. You know, I was always the guy on the team with the quick wit, you know, and it just carries over to the broadcast. And it's a breath of fresh air. You know, people don't like to see the same things over and over, just like you in comedy. You don't want to see – you want to see somebody with fresh ideas, someone that, you know, that you can relate to with some of the things they're saying. You don't want to have the same acts over and over because you can't tell the difference between them because they all look alike. So you want to be able to create your own style, your own way, your own path, because people respect you when you do that. You know what I'm saying? And it's a bold move. I mean, you know, it's a bold move sometimes to go against the grain. You know, a lot of people can't do it, you know? Yeah. And so I feel like I'm a trailblazer per se, because I listen to a lot of broadcasters, you know, do games. And it's funny, you know, guys now trying to do catchphrases. Yeah. They're trying to throw in hip hop to the broadcast like I do. And I kind of feel like that the old vampire that's like, or, you know, that spread out, all these other vampires are created from me. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like that's pretty cool for me.
You're a trailblazer.
So with your podcast, you use one of your catchphrases as the name of the podcast.
Yes.
So I love that. what made you want to do a podcast? Like, how did that decision come about? How did you get started with that?
Well, you know what? COVID really was the reason, you know, because I was sitting at home like Howard Hughes, hiding for 3 months, couldn't go anywhere. And, you know, I was just like, you know, I need to find something to do, something that'll interest me, you know, just to keep me sharp, you know. And I've always wanted to do it. You know, my producer, John Stinger, we've always talked about it. My friend, Timmy Whispers, we all talked about it. But we just never, you know, it's like that wheel spinning and you're trying to get it to the ground, but you can't.
Right.
And finally, we did it. I was talking to a neighbor of mine. This is really why I did it. I was talking to a neighbor of mine, and we're at the mailbox talking. Of course, we're social distancing. And he tells me, he says, "Hey, man, you'd be great doing a podcast. I watch the games. You're funny. Oh, my God, you should do it." So I was like, "I don't know, man. I'm always on other people's podcasts. I'm like, I kind of like that. I don't have the pressure and all that stuff." He goes, "No, you'd be good. I got a podcast." And I go, "Really?" I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, what the hell are you talking about? So he's like a lawyer. Like, I'm like, you know, I said, well, is it a law podcast? He's like, no, it's just like, I like to hunt and fish. And, you know, so I go, oh, I just like to hear myself talk. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I go, well, how many people do you have? So I'm thinking he has a lot, you know, because he works, he knows people, the networking. He's like, I got five listeners. And I'm like, well, that must suck. Five listeners. So he's like, no. He goes, he says, it just gives me a forum where I can just say what I want, talk about things that interest me. And if my family and friends won't listen, great, so be it. But he enjoyed it. So I was like, well, damn, if he got one with five listeners, and I said, you know, and my name's pretty big, you know, I'm thinking I can do pretty good. And Jim Rome, I'm always on Jim Rome's podcast, you know. And he even said to me, he's like, hey, you need to get your own podcast, you know. And I was like, he goes, if you want me, I'll help you. I'll get you started. And so he was a big inspiration of doing it too. So I get a That's shout awesome. Out to my man, Jim Rome.
Yeah.
And because I'm a big fan of his too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's great. I mean, he's the trailblazer.
That's true.
And I do have, a question I have in terms of broadcasting. I'm assuming you were doing the game that Carlos Boozer punched the ref in the groin during. Were you doing that game? What was that moment like? Because that might be the greatest clip. That might be better than MJ dunking at the dunk contest. Was that?
I mean, listen, man, I've been hit there, and I have little empathy for that situation.
Yeah,
we know, and he did it like he punched. It wasn't like a tap. He literally was like excited.
Well, yeah,
and it was like an uppercut.
Yeah, for those listening who don't know this clip, Google it. But basically, Boozer hit a shot. He was celebrating. He didn't see the ref, and he does a turnaround uppercut fist bump right into the man region.
Groin area.
Yeah,
it was like he was hitting the speed bag. Yeah, it was like, boom, and it did, and I felt. I mean, I literally my stomach hurt after watching that. We had a situation the other night in the game where the opposing player. Hit the ref, like he reached back and he accidentally slapped the ref in the groin area.
Oh, yeah. No.
And he had to take a standing eight count, real well, not a standing, a sitting eight count. He had to sit down. So
it happens
quite frequently in games. A lot of times if you watch a game, guy going to the hole, they collide midair, guy gets kneed.
Yeah.
It happens a lot, man. And it's like it's cringy. It's like, ugh. Yeah.
No, I know. In my playing days, in my storied career, which I know you're all familiar with, I got hit there a few times. It was not. And I will say, Carl, I have so much respect for Carlos Boozer. I mean, you probably know him personally better than I do. Maybe he's a horrible guy, but he seems like a good guy. And the reason why I have so much respect for him is he had that game where he wore shoe polish on his head in an accident. And he took that like a champ. He was honest about it. If you Google it, for those of you who aren't basketball fans, Google it, because he was honest. He was like, I was trying to, you know, help it out up there.
That was the worst hairdo I'd ever seen in my life. It was.
Can you imagine?
It was
you
like
were on his team.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
Chumba.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It was like somebody took an ink balloon and threw it on his head.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I was like, did you, like, when you were getting this put in, Carlos, did you not think people were going to notice? Like, that wasn't your real hair. Did you not think, like, this doesn't look real?
Yeah, and I mean, and BJ was saying, you know, and you were mentioning too, like, you were like the roast master of the team.
Yes,
I can only imagine if you were on that team.
He was lucky he wasn't on that team, because there's a lot of I'm the king of the roast master. Okay,
yeah,
but there's a lot of guys on that team that would have never let him live that down.
Yeah,
he would have asked to be traded on our team.
Yeah, he would have taken the T-Wolves.
You got to remember, okay? There's a Scottie Pippen. He cut all his hair off one day because the barber messed his hair up. High top fade messed it up, so he ends up shaving his whole head bald. And he had all these. He looked like a Shar Pei. He had all these rolls in the back of his head. It looked like a pack of hot dogs. You know, it's just like, or you know, so if you had a piece of clay and you squeezed it and then you left your hand marks in it, you know, that's what it looked like. It was the worst thing I'd ever seen in my life. And I told him, I said, man, if I was you, I would just put on a hat. Just play with a hat, you know, because the headbands, no one wore headbands back then. But yeah, he had the ugliest shaped head ever.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. I got to say, King, when things open up, next time I'm performing in Chicago, because I like to do audience interaction, I'll bring audience members on stage. But if you want, like, up front just to roast people in the front row, you can open for me and you can take 10. You can just start roasting. Like, that'd be amazing. Hey, you do my job for me.
You have no idea how many people have asked me to, like, come up on amateur night and do stuff.
You should.
Because they know they're like, oh my God, you're so funny. You'd be great at it. And I'm like, I don't know, man.
It's a different comedy.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
Like, I can do it, but, like, I have so much respect for you and guys that do it. You're up there by yourself, you know, and you got to have material. If something bombs, you know, you got to have the ability to get out of it quick and do something else. Yeah, see, if I bombed, I'd be like, and they'd be like, boo, I'd be like, man, I'm coming to the stands. There's going to be a malice in the palace. Oh, you're going to boo me? Okay, boo that sucker. So, but I did see Blake Griffin is starting to do it.
Yeah.
And I saw him. And I'm like, man, if he's doing it, I'm way more funnier than him.
Yeah, right. Like, it might be your new podcast.
Well, yeah.
But that is the thing where, like, it's that dynamic of, it's one thing to be funny in a context where they don't expect it. So, like, there's not a lot of funny color commentators. And so people going in there, like, you're coming in with really funny lines where it's in a context where it's not like, I just paid $30 and I'm sitting there expecting you to be funny and nothing else. And they don't want to hear, you know, breaking down anything else other than make me laugh. But
you
I still think
funny,
you can
though?
Do it.
You know what's funny is that because I've given so many nicknames to people, okay?
Yeah.
And so people expect that now. So anytime we get a new player, what nickname are you going to give him?
Yeah.
Like, Jesus, like, first of all, nicknames are earned. You don't just give a guy a nickname. I'm not going to give the 15th man on the roster a nickname when he's not playing. Now, I will say this. I broke a trend because Jimmy Butler, when Jimmy was a rookie, he was playing 8 minutes a game for Thibodeau. Almost on the verge of getting cut.
Wow.
So he came up to me one day on the plane. He said, hey, Stace, how come you haven't given me a nickname? You know, everybody's got a nickname. You haven't gave me a nickname. You know, give me a catchphrase or something. Man, help a brother out. So I said, you know what, Jimmy? I said, let me think about it, and then I'll get back to you. So next game he's playing, and we're blowing someone out, so he got a little bit more minutes. And so he's scoring, and I was like, you know, Bucks, Jimmy G Buckets gets another bucket. And the G stands for gets. And so people are like, Jimmy Buckets, you know, because Chicago's like, you know, mob, mafia type thing.
Yeah.
So that's where I was going with that, because that's Chicago style. And Jimmy's a Chicago style player.
He is.
Tough, hard nose, you know, great defensive player. So I gave him Jimmy G. The G stands for gets buckets. And so it caught on like hotcakes.
Yeah.
And he's got a clothing line now, Jimmy G Buckets.
So I'm like, hey, man, royalties.
Don't be afraid to give me about 5% of that, buddy.
Yeah, you got naming rights on that. That's crazy. And I mean, I don't want to say that you are the reason why the Heat went to the finals, but I think that you inspired him to be a great player. I don't think if he didn't have to rise up to Jimmy G Buckets, he never would have been that good. So
I'd like to say all the names I've given guys, you know, I like to think that it enhanced their career a little bit. You know, it gave them something that fans could gravitate to, you know, whether it's a catchphrase or an actual nickname. The one thing about all the guys that played here, they were all great guys. You know, they're great guys. No, we didn't have any jerks, you know. And whenever you see them, they always come up to you, tell you thank you. And, you know, Jimmy's came out on public and said, hey, you know, I probably wouldn't be here with this nickname if it wasn't for Stacey King. So he always gives me credit, which is awesome, you know. And
some money would be good, too.
It's not even like I care. Like, I don't care, you know. You like it, great. That's all I care about. So I don't really care. As long as it benefits you, hey, man, I'm glad for it. But to hear guys come out and say thank you, and it does mean a lot that they really liked it and it's helped them in some way, you know. So
no, that's awesome. Sure.
You know, but it was a lot of fun. Chicago, it's a Chicago thing, basically, you know, because, you know, Chicago loves, like, it's a fun city. It's a sports town. They like to gravitate to names and, you know, they love that kind of stuff. So it's just kind of taken off here, you know, give me the hot sauce. That's a huge phrase here in Chicago. So that's why we named the show that, because it's a great tagline. People know who it is. So when you're Googling or something, you say, oh, Stacey King, give me the hot sauce. Oh, that's good. You know, so that's helped the channel grow. That's helped our YouTube channel grow. That's helped our podcast grow, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. And like you guys, you know, if you don't like what you do, you know, you don't want to do it. You know, you want to be somewhere, you want to go to work every day and have fun and enjoy going to work. And it's not a job. You know, playing professional sports and playing college basketball, it was fun. You know, college basketball is way more fun than NBA because there was no money involved. It was all just the prestige of the university. We were all fighting for the same thing. There was no money. You get to pros, the NBA level, it's awesome. If you get to a championship level team, make a lot of money, you know. But at the end of the day, like, if you ask most players who really love the game of basketball, they would have played for free.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it becomes a job, you know, it becomes a job in the NBA. And I've always said, when things start to become a job and it's not fun anymore, it's time to change and do something else. And that's why, you know, I went into coaching right after, you know, I retired from basketball, and I coached for 4 or 5 years in the CBA. And all these things, guys, have helped me in my broadcasting. So I have a player's perspective, and I have a coach's perspective, and then basically a front office person's perspective, because I was also the general manager. So I have all this I can tie into my broadcast, which I see, like, for instance, most people who watch an NBA game, they see topical stuff, you know, the obvious, you know. But, like, for me, I go deep underneath. I can see things that you don't see. And then when I point it out, you go, oh, my God, I didn't even notice that. Yeah. You know, and you see that. That's what makes a good broadcaster, in my opinion. You know, because you got grandma that's at home. She's 79 years old. She doesn't know anything about a pick and roll. She knows nothing about a 1-5 pick and roll. She doesn't know anything about a single double. She knows nothing about basketball lingo. So you have to be able, as a broadcaster, you have to be able to break down the game to the simplest forms for the simplest fans, and then still be credible to the people who know what that is. And you've got to find a way, a balance, to tie all that in, and then with a little humor. Because when you watch our game and you listen to our podcast, it's like if you were in a bar, you know, you were with your friends, and you're just laughing, and I'm saying things that you're thinking.
Yeah.
Like, you're thinking, like, oh, that was a terrible shot. And I'll say it. That was a bad shot. That was a terrible shot.
Yeah,
I'll
that's
say
so
that.
Refreshing. Yeah, that's what's so refreshing.
And people want to hear the truth. People want to hear the truth. People, listen, everybody's smart. No one's not, people are smart. They know sports. So if someone's playing bad and they're taking bad shots, you know they're taking bad shots. You know they're stinking that night. And if your announcers are sugarcoating and going, well, you know, it's the ref's fault. It's so-and-so's fault. No, it's not the ref's fault. He sucks tonight, you know, and, and that's – you want honesty.
Yeah. No, it's true. No, you're right. It's – you bring that – you bring that because you do – that's what's great about your perspective is you have that – the coach, the GM, the player – and humor, because that is a rare thing.
Humor is important.
Yeah, because there's some of those guys. I mean, like I love Bill Walton. He is hilarious. But you know, at this point in time, he's not bringing like the most hardcore analysis to the games that he's doing.
Yeah.
But he's hilarious and he's entertaining, so he's great. But it's so rare that you get the humor in that. And then also, in terms of like, I mean, the Bulls. I got to give the Bulls credit. In terms of, you're talking about their sports town and how much people love the nicknames, but also just like the pomp and circumstance of the Chicago Bulls, what goes on at the UC, just the introductions. There's never been anything better than the Chicago Bulls theme song. Like in sports, there's nothing better, even as a Warriors fan. They do some good stuff. They drop the lights down. Nothing better than the lights go down, the music
hits. Alan Parsons.
Yeah.
That to me is one of the most iconic introductions ever.
Ever. No, there's nothing better in the history of sports.
Even to this day, when I listen to it, I get chills.
That's
you know?
My question.
And then,
yeah.
And then you that hear that. And from North Carolina, you know, then you'd be like, you ready to go in the game. You know what I'm saying? the Bulls in general are iconic. You know, even though they've had some down times, Their merchandise still sells. You know, the Last Dance only brought more fans to the Bulls, you know. Yeah. And so, you know, we have a whole new front office. We have, you know, a bunch of new personnel. And we're going in the right direction. You know, we just made a trade.
Mad respect for not tanking. I love that you guys didn't tank. I can't stand the tank. I love that you guys, you know, you're on the cusp of the play-in and the 8 seed and all that. But instead of tanking like that, you went for it. You got Vucevic. I loved it. It was great.
That's not going to happen in this front office. They want to win. Yeah. They want to win the right way. They want to build. You know, these guys came in and really nobody on this team was their guys they drafted. These were guys that were given to them. So they were in evaluation period the first 40 games of the season. So they evaluated and realize that, hey, we need another all-star caliber player to play along with Zach LaVine. So they go out and get Vucevic. They gave up some young players. People question that. Oh, you have so many young players. It's like, well, these young players are not developing here. You know, they've been starters. They're good kids, but they're not developing at the pace that they should in year four. So at some point, you know, when you're looking at your talent, you're doing talent evaluation, you're saying, okay, they've been here 4 years. And they're still haven't got to the point where they need to be in year four. So now you got to say to yourself, do we hold on to them and wait two more years, or do we flip them and try to get someone in here to build build a team the way we want? We drafted Patrick Williams. That was their first, their first draft pick this year. Yeah. They hit a home run with him. In my opinion, he's going to be the next Kawhi Leonard. He's that type of player. And then you get, Zach, who's an all-star now, and you got Vucevic. So now, long term, it's going to help us recruit other good players. So other free agents will say, hey, man, Chicago's a great city. I love coming to Chicago. They got a great fan base. They're iconic. I want to play in Chicago now. They're putting a winning team together. So, that's going to encourage guys to come. Maybe we're able to get, a Kawhi Leonard this next time around. Maybe we're able to get a Giannis or someone that would probably never thought about it before because we weren't winning. But now they see what we're doing, and especially being in the Eastern Conference where it's not as strong as the West.
Yeah.
So you may have some guys saying, listen, I'm getting out of the West because as long as LeBron James is here, we ain't going nowhere. So I'm going to go to the East where I have an opportunity to get to the finals every year. So that helps us too.
I mean, listen, the East at times, King, there's times where I feel like you and I in the starting lineup today could compete in the East right now. I mean, I set the record, the Drake High and Tremiro three-point shooting contest. kick it to you in the post. I think you got a squad.
I'm not going to the post. I'm just telling you right now.
I'll just shuffle. I'll just shuffle back and forth.
Hey, I'm shooting threes, baby. As soon as I get out the car, throw it to me. I got Steph Curry range.
Hey, I love it. Hey, you know what? Let's and James, he can be our Oakley. James is a war veteran, and he's a MMA fighter, so he can just go and he can.
I'm a big MMA fan.
Yeah.
Huge.
No,
we now have a squad. We just had Curtis Blades on a couple weeks ago.
Awesome. Yeah. I need you to give me a nickname though. See, I'm gonna have to earn my nickname.
Let me think. Okay, so you
feel
like,
free to insult
physical.
Him. Yeah, feel free to insult him.
Totally can insult me. I don't care. That's fine.
No. I gotta give you a good name. God, you put me on the spot.
No. You take your time. You come back to me. It's all good.
Yeah, James, okay, you only said four words. You can't make him give you one after four words. You got to. I'm just kidding.
Well, no, yeah. I love this because I'm also a Chicago person. Like, I love Chicago. I went to Navy basic training in Chicago at Great Lakes there.
Yeah.
I go back. I went and saw the Cubs the season before they added lights to the stadium because I really wanted to go watch that before they messed that up. I grew up watching Frank Thomas, even though I grew up in Texas. I love Frank Thomas. So all the stuff that I love. Yeah, like everything I love about Chicago. And Chicago is just – you have some of the best comedians in America coming out of Chicago too. Get Hannibal Buress come out of there. I mean, you just, Eric Andre, like you just have like people who are just like, oh, my gosh, this – You have everything there. I mean, that's exactly where most of the SNL cast originally came from.
Yeah.
You didn't spend time watching Bimbo Coles and Andrew DeClercq and the Warriors. That wasn't your thing.
No, that wasn't my thing. Actually, my experience with the NBA is my uncle who played at UNLV the season that the Rebels won the championship. So then his friends were Larry Johnson and Stacey Augmon. So I got to meet them when I was a kid. And for me, that was a huge deal. And I remember being like, oh, my gosh, like, this is amazing. Those guys went on to have, you know, great careers. Not Jordan-level careers, but they went on to have great careers. And so that was my time of watching the NBA. You know, I loved that stuff.
Here's 6 degrees of separation.
Okay.
Larry Johnson was supposed to come to Oklahoma and play with me. My senior year would have been his junior year. And he wanted to come to OU. And was very close to coming to OU. And then somehow they flipped him, and he ended up going to Vegas. I can only imagine why it was flipped. But, he ended up going to UNLV. And had he came to Oklahoma, I would have won a championship my senior year. Yes. Yes. So,
got that money.
That's 6 degrees of separation. Stacey Augmon is one of my good friends.
I love
Greg Anthony. So I'm Anderson Hunt. So I'm cool with all those dudes. You know what else, James? I still have the all-time scoring record for visiting players in Thomas Mack Arena.
Oh, no
48
way.
48 points.
Oh,
Jimmer Fredette almost broke it in the Mountain West tournament.
That's right.
I think he had 44. And I was sitting there like Mercury Moore is like, oh, hell no. Oh, putting a hex on him. Hex on him. You know, so that record has been that record was since 1989.
Wow, that is awesome.
I don't think it'll ever be broken because, you know, you got to be able to score. But with the 3-point line, Jimmer Fredette came pretty close, but I still don't think it'll ever happen because the way the game is played today with the team ball and everything, I think it'll be hard for someone to get, you know, let alone 40.
I know some of these March Madness games, it'll be like 18-16 at the half. And you're like, is this a baseball game? Like, what are we doing here?
When I played in the finals in 88, it was 50-50 at halftime.
Yeah.
Well, and hey, I don't want to brag you guys about my family since James bragged about his family. This is true. My grandpa, he played at the University of Illinois, but that was in like, he's deceased now. That was like in the 1930s when you could be 5'10 and white and bad and in dress shoes and play for the University of Illinois.
With the black socks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wooden shoes.
That's Thomas the Mack Arena, though. That's a great arena to play in, man.
It's a great place to play a college basketball game.
Yeah.
And back then, when they were big time, see, I go back, we used to play UNLV every year. So I go back to Armin Gilliam's time there and Freddie Banks, Gerald Patio. We played against those teams. And then my Oklahoma team played against Larry Johnson and them when I left. But we played against Moses Scurry my senior year. We played against Moses Scurry and that group before Larry came.
Yeah.
And I really thought we had Larry. Larry was a difference maker. They had the same team that we beat the year before, and they didn't get very far in the tournament. So that's how big of an impact Larry Johnson made on that team. They went undefeated. They went undefeated the 1 year, and then they lost to Duke. Yep. You know, in the Final Four in a championship game. But that's how big a difference Larry Johnson made on that team.
He was a hero in Vegas. Like, everyone loved that guy. But also, you're right. I think he got some cheddar for that move because he was driving a nice
statue,
car when I met
there's
him.
There's a stuff. Statue of limitations now, so we can talk it.
Yeah.
Say whatever
he was like. I'm pretty sure he had nice clothes, a nice ride.
Yes.
I was like,
yes.
In college, yes. Like, I'm on student loan debt. What's going on here? Like, you know,
and the cool, you know, the funny thing about that, talking to all the guys that were there, you know, during that time, Vegas Strip was popping.
Yeah.
So they got to go to all the fights free, the concerts free, you know, they got to do all that stuff. And that was a recruiting ploy for anybody that came on a recruiting trip. You know, I went there on a recruiting trip and I was like, oh, this is nice. It's nice. But then when I saw the campus, I was like, this is trash. The campus looked like a JUCO.
That's my alma mater for undergrad. No, it's still trash.
Yeah, because I was like, because you know when you go to Kentucky, you know, Oklahoma, Iowa, UCLA, you see these big, beautiful campuses.
Yeah.
And so when you go to Vegas, you know, once you get past the glamour and the strip and all that, and you go to the campus, it's like, is
you're
this
in a portable. Yeah, you're in a portable classroom.
My high school was bigger than that.
It's actually not a big campus, and it's really
no.
It hasn't really upgraded that much from back then to now. I mean, I graduated in 2009, but still is like one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's not. It doesn't matter.
Now, I will say in terms of craziness, King, I've tried to communicate. Like to James and Luke's the other host, that how fearsome of a human being just in general, not just on the court, Charles Oakley was, but they don't get it. I can't, like, is there, can you communicate to this man? Because I tried to tell some of the stories of him punching Dr. J, in a pickup game. And I mean,
I will tell you this,
educate
man,
them.
Like there is a handful of guys that if I was to walk down a street with thugs, that you know, I would have Oakley on my team.
Yeah.
I would have Xavier McDaniel on my team.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I would have Larry Johnson on my team.
Yeah.
I would even take Bill Lane Beer on my team. You know, guys that you know is not afraid. Maurice Lucas was another tough guy. Buck Williams. I mean, back then, you know, guys, fights were fights. There was no slapping, you know, slapping each other. There were actual fist fights. Dudes knew how to fight because most of the guys in the NBA at that particular time come from a background where you have to fight all the time. Yeah. So they know how to fight. You know, a lot of these guys now that are coming up in the NBA, you know, they're not in that background. They're not growing up like that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's a little different. You know what I'm saying? If you watch an NBA fight, it's funny. Guys don't really want to fight.
Yeah. No.
See, back in the 90s, if a fight broke out, the whole benches got involved.
Yeah.
Phil Jackson used to throw us off the bench. Get out there. Get up your teammate. You know, and then we'd be like, we're going to get fined. He goes, if you don't get out there, I'm going to fine you more than they're going to fine you. So
Jeff Van Gundy holding on to the legs.
I'll tell you a funny story. Here's a funny story. Our assistant coach, Johnny Bach, the late, great Johnny Bach, he was the orchestrator of the defense that we were winning championships with. And so when I was in college, I was a junior, and they played the Pistons, and it was a bitter rivalry. And so there was a fight breaks out. So Rick Mahorn is trying to fight Juwan Olden. So they're fighting, you know, boom, boom. So Johnny Bach, the assistant coach for the Bulls, tries to jump in and stop it. Doug Collins is trying to stop it. So Rick Mahorn takes Johnny Bach and just basically suplexes him, body slams him on the table. Now, Johnny Bach at that time was probably in his 60s, probably weighed about 145 pounds, little guy. And he just body slams, you know. So when I came to the Bulls, Johnny Bach, now this is a funny story. So Johnny Bach, he used to wear these Western clothes, wear these big Western belts. He's big in the Western. He flew planes. You know, he was a very eccentric. He was in art. A lot of people didn't know that. And he played for the Boston Celtics back in the early day. So a really tough guy, military guy, went to Vietnam. Tough guy, you know. And so we were on the bench one day, and he says, hey, he's going to show you something. And I'm like, and we're getting ready to play the Pistons. And he says, let me tell you something. He says, if anything goes down tonight, I'm ready. And I'm looking at him like, okay, you're an older man. I saw you get body slammed the year before on the table. There's really not a lot you can do. So he lifts up his pants leg, and he's got one of those little baby Derringers with like a little gun like those ladies used to wear in the old Westerns, and they put him in a garter. He had one of those in a holster in his boot, cowboy boot, swear to God. And I was like, looking like, okay, like, is this legal? Like, does he have a concealed to carry? Like, what the hell is going on here? What if he shoots that thing, it goes off and shoots it in his boot, and it goes off and ricochets and hits one of us, you know? Oh. But now I look back on it, it's one of the funniest things, one of the funniest stories
I've
ever
heard. That's hilarious.
I tell people that. It's hilarious.
He was the original Gilbert Arenas. Is that too real?
Yeah.
Is that too real? Too real?
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't hurt me, Gilbert.
Yeah.
I love you, buddy.
Yeah.
Big fan. I loved you at the Warriors. Don't hurt me.
It was the damnedest thing. I'm like, this dude's got a loaded gun in a holster.
That is hilarious.
In his boot.
And I love it.
And it was one of those with two bullets. They're like two little things, and he only shoots two bullets. He said, I only need two. I'm like, okay, I'm going to move away from you and go down to the end of the bench. Phil's looking for me. Stay.
Yeah.
I'm like, I ain't sitting by that crazy old man.
You feel good to know that most of the time when Derringers fire, they don't actually work. They'll like actually break apart in someone's hand. So you just to feel more comfortable.
Hey.
Just so you know.
Hey, all I know is he was a marksman.
not with a Derringer, you can't be a marksman.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, James.
Hey, I was a firearms instructor for years. Like that, we shot.
I don't want to be the guy having that thing aimed
at
me.
That's
yeah, right. I'm not. I don't care how if it can't shoot straight. I don't want it anywhere near.
No, well, I don't want it near me.
They do shoot. They do shoot cattywampus.
No. Is everybody left?
Yeah, I'm just packaging them up.
All right, we're gonna let people left. All right, Let's get you out of here.
Well,
then.
I will say, King. I do. I mean, I have so much respect because I know you're such a big fan of my stand-up. You listen to my SiriusXM stuff all the time on the way to UC.
When you come to Chicago, let us know.
No, I will. I will. And I know how intimidated you were coming in to talk to me tonight. And I appreciate you. I'm just a real guy just like you. So that was cool that you just were so relaxed about it.
Man. I'm a man of the people.
No, you're the man. This was awesome. A true pleasure.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it, man. It's awesome.
Sure. Can you, just before we go, can you let everybody know where they could find you, how they could find the podcast, how they could find about you and all that stuff?
You can find the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, any Podbean, all of them. And then and that's the audio version. If you want to see us in studio like we're on right now, you can go to YouTube. Just type in Give Me the Hot Sauce. And you'll see our segments on YouTube. You can catch the show, not live, but taped. And so it gives people two different avenues to look at. If you want to hear the audio version, you're working out, you're driving in your car. All I will say this, be prepared to laugh your ass off. I will say that.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Because we're all over the place.
It's hilarious.
We're not a typical sports podcast. We hit everything. You know, we talk about everything. We do talk sports, but we got off the wall segment where we're talking about movies or our life, you know, things we did as child in our childhood. So we try to keep it fresh. We have good guests, so it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's insightful too. You like your interview with Jamal Crawford just about what he does in Seattle and in Washington and just all the different ways. It's a really great podcast. I definitely listen to his podcast, and I got to say, King, I think it's a pretty even trade. I get you front row tickets to my show. You get the courtside seats. I don't think that's how that works.
I mean, people have to.
I will promise you this: if you come to Chicago and you do a show in Chicago, we will come. Me and Timmy Whispers, we will come check you out.
Love it.
There you go.
Thank you. That was a soft no on the court side seats for the Bulls. Is that a soft no? I think it was a soft
no. Hey, we're still in COVID, buddy. I don't know what's going to be.
Yeah, that's true.
It's all over.
That's true.
I don't even know. But I will say this. If they're letting people in the arena, I will get you tickets to the game.
Oh, man. Oh, King. Bravo. Oh, I was kidding, but I'll take that. Wow, I'm honored.
He's like, I don't turn nothing down but my collar.
No, hey, true. And listen, if I played for the Bulls, I'd be getting free food all over the place. So you're better than I am. You are. I appreciate it.
That's true. Most of my midsection would be made up of Chicago-style pizza, I'm telling you right
now.
Oh,
baby, Chicago-style pizza, bro.
Okay, wait, before we go now, what's your favorite pizza place in Chicago?
I'm a Lou Malnati's man.
I am too. There we go.
I'm a Luma.
We take him out to dinner too. So he gets you the tickets, David. We take him out to dinner at Luma.
Yes.
We have so
Let's
much
do
fun.
It.
All right.
Let's do it.
All right, David, where can people find you at?
DavidStudebaker.com, David Studebaker on Instagram and Twitter and all that jazz.
That's right. You go to JamesDCrevison.com or ComedyPreneur.com. Please check us out. We're on Spotify. We're on everything. We're literally on everything. We're on YouTube. You can come and check it out.
And listen to the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. It's fantastic.
So great. I think it was Horace and Harvey Grant that he had on there. That was amazing. I laughed so hard. Those guys are, oh my gosh. That was So I love it. I'm a big fan. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming on. We totally appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
All right. Now
Let's
you
got to do it again.
Now you're going to watch some NCAA basketball, right?
Yes. I'm getting ready to go watch it now.
All right. So we'll let you go. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Thank you, King.
Take it easy, boys.